Hello and welcome. My name is Lloyd Borrell. My mission is sharing solutions and raising awareness so that we can all live a happy and healthy life in our electromagnetic world. Today, I'm thrilled to have as my guest, Dr. Beverly Rubick. Dr. Beverly earned her PhD in biophysics at the University of California, Berkeley. She has published over 90 scientific papers, 2 books, and she's founder and president of the Institute for Frontier Science, a non-profit laboratory in Emeryville, California. Dr. Rubick is focused on science and medicine that goes beyond the mainstream. Dr. Beverly teaches energy medicine to graduate students at Saybrook University and serves on the editorial board of several medical journals. So today we're going to be talking about Dr. Beverly's latest research paper, which explores the possible role of wireless and in particular 5G in the COVID-19 pandemic. And we're going to dig deep into the science on that. And we're also going to be talking about solutions, of course, how 5G can perhaps be implemented safely. Is that possible? Well, that's what we're going to find out. And personal solutions for EMFs from an energy perspective. Dr. Beverly is based in the San Francisco Bay Area, and you can contact her through her website, frontiersciences.org. So that's all one word, frontiersciences with an S, .org. Dr. Beverly, welcome.
Thank you, Lloyd. It's my pleasure.
It's a great pleasure to have you on. And so we spoke before, obviously, for my Healing with Vibration Summit, and we're on a little bit of a different topic here. So I'd like to start. So I know back in 2004, you did this research on the adverse effects of 4G cell phone radiation on humans. Can you tell us a little bit about that project first, I think, because that's going to set the scene here for what we're going to talk about.
Yes, actually, that project was 2014, and it was sponsored by the Weston A. Price Foundation, which advocates a diet that Weston A. Price, a dentist in the mid-20th century, recommended to advance our health, which is a very natural diet, grass-fed animal meat and lots of organic vegetables, raw milk, pastured eggs. I mean, it's an excellent diet. And they asked the question whether first of all, is there an effect of wireless on the blood, and whether their diet might prevent any dire consequences of wireless radiation on the blood. So I set up a pilot study with 10 adults from ages 21 to 75 who were healthy, normal, and eating varying amounts of this diet. Most of them were on the diet for at least 6 years. And I brought them in. They had to refrain from using their cell phones or wireless devices for 4 hours prior. They had to fast for 5 hours. So I looked at their blood under the microscope. I have a dark field microscope, and I've been doing research on live blood analysis for over 25 years. So I'm very accustomed to knowing what's healthy blood. Healthy blood looks beautiful under the microscope, nice rounded red blood cells separated from one another. The plasma should look clean in a fasted state, and white blood cells should be slowly moving along. And in fact, I did see this in what I call the baseline blood test of this population. Then I exposed them to a 4G smartphone turned on but not receiving any calls or texts. For 45 minutes, they wore it in a backpack in my laboratory while they simply read a magazine. And then I tested their blood again, and lo and behold, I saw the blood had changed dramatically. Instead of this beautiful blood that they had earlier, red blood cells were sticky in aggregates, in rolls that we call rouleaux, the French word for rolls, stacked together and this picture is certainly very compromised. Blood needs to flow single file through the tiniest capillaries of the body. And when the red blood cells are sticky or stuck together in aggregates, they cannot circulate very well. And the microcirculation, which is in every organ, microcapillaries, is impaired throughout the body. So that was the blood picture after 45 minutes of wearing a cell phone turned on, but not using it. Then I asked them to use the cell phone, to hold onto the cell phone and go online, perform texts, and also make 2 5-minute phone calls, holding their phone near the head, not necessarily on the ear, but say within an inch or so as recommended in the manuals. 2 5-minute phone calls near the head, making the phone calls to me on a landline nearby. And then I looked at the blood again 45 minutes later after active use of the phone and found the blood had further deteriorated. In many cases, the stickiness of the cells had broken up, but now the red blood cells were disheveled. They were changed in shape and in many cases spiky cells, balled up and spiky. So again, this shape of cell, which we call in hematology an echinocyte, sort of like a sea urchin and echinoderm, can't circulate very well through the microcirculation. And so that was my study. And 9 out of 10 adults showed this picture. And the diet did not save them. In other words, we didn't see a benefit of this diet, sad to say, even though it's a very healthy diet. It isn't sufficient to prevent these adverse blood changes. And then I also noted that people 50 years old and elderly showed more serious changes in their blood than the younger set. Although the older people use the cell phone less, I also quizzed them on how many hours per day. And back in 2014, you know, people were using their cell phones maybe 3 or 4 hours a day. But now it seems today, I'd say it's different. People are using their cell phones considerably longer.
Yes. And that, I recall that Professor Magda Havas, who you know, and I know too, has done similar kind of research on this and came to similar conclusions. And the thing is, so we're talking about the blood, and from what I understand, what's concerning is what this means for your health, yeah? So because what we're seeing in the blood, that's going to translate very probably into stress, disease, or what we don't know quite what, but some non-optimal outcome at some point down the line, yeah.
Well, circulation would be compromised all over the body. And if people are using their cell phones even longer than 45 minutes, as most are, you can expect that these changes would be relatively constant in their blood. I think certainly the stickiness of red blood cells is reversible, but echinocytes, I'm not so certain. I know that's a sign of disease seen in cirrhosis of the liver, for example, in the literature. And all of these changes put a person more at risk for cardiovascular incidents, such as heart attack, stroke, or thrombosis, clotting somewhere in the body. The stickiness of red blood cells is really the first stage of blood clotting. And then when I heard about COVID, I started making a connection because COVID-19 isn't a normal viral pneumonia as we first thought, with putting people on ventilators, etc. But it seemed to be more of a disease of the blood as the saga unfolded in 2020, and we heard more from the physicians, the frontline doctors, and the research papers that were coming out.
Yes. And so what led you to think about this role of wireless in the COVID-19 pandemic specifically?
Well, my blood study of 2014 gave me a clue that maybe something is involved here. But also, there were some other factors that came out. And one of them was oxidative stress. Oxidative stress is a big problem in COVID-19. It actually may be a deeper problem than the so-called viral pneumonia effect. In other words, free radical production from an immune system gone awry, which COVID-19 can do. It can disrupt the immune system. First of all, lymphocytes are decreased similar to HIV, in fact. And then there's often autoimmune effects or hyperinflammation, which leads to free radicals, which is oxidative stress. And then a lot of organs, tissues, and biomolecules are attacked. And I knew from the literature on the effects of wireless radiation exposure that oxidative stress was also a very big deal. In fact, it was one of the mechanisms of action for how we think all of these wireless microwaves, not just 5G, but we're talking about 2G, 3G, 4G, and 5G, how they exacerbate problems in our bodies. Oxidative stress is key. And so as I started reading the literature of both wireless radiation bioeffects and COVID-19 literature as it unfolded in 2020, I kept seeing connections and said, my goodness, I'm wondering if there's a relationship here. And then I noticed, looking at the CDC website, the Center for Disease Control, that they talk about three factors in all diseases. There's an agent, like a virus, or maybe a gene that's gone awry. There's the overall health of the host. How healthy are they to withstand this onslaught? And then there's the environment. Those are the three pillars, or the epidemiological triad, as it's called. And it seemed to me all the attention was on the virus and some attention on the health of the host. They talked about comorbid factors like diabetes and lung diseases and obesity, but nobody was talking about the environment, or so it seemed. And I said, I wonder why. I mean, Wuhan, the city in China where this virus began in December 2019, apparently went totally 5G. It was turned on, and it was one of China's model cities in 5G. And all of that was turned on October 31st, 2019. So is it just a coincidence that a couple months later, this disorder breaks out in Wuhan? And then there was a study done by some Spanish researchers, and there was an English translation online, that showed a correspondence between 5G wireless infrastructure, namely the 5G antennas that were now going up here, there, and everywhere in the world, and the initial outbreaks of coronavirus, of COVID-19, in places like South Korea, in Northern Italy, in New York City, Southern California, Silicon Valley, Seattle. These were some of the early hotbeds of COVID-19. And once again, it clicked in my head, is there a relationship? This Spanish researcher thought so. And talking to others, you know, we wondered about this, the nearness of the 5G antennas, the infrastructure, and the original spreading of COVID. Now, COVID-19 is also in regions today where my understanding is there's very little wireless, like in India, in Africa. I don't think there's a one-to-one correspondence here. And I'm not saying that 4G or 5G is the cause of COVID. There are some people who are what I would call virus deniers, and they seem to think that this is all about wireless, and there's really nothing infectious here. I disagree with that. I think I've been reading the literature. There's really quite an expansive literature developing on COVID and the agent underlying it and detailed molecular biology. So we can't dismiss that. And also in regions of the world where there's no or very little wireless, there's now a growing amount of COVID. And if it were just all about 5G, well, we wouldn't see this world proliferation if we trust the numbers. But of course, that's another issue with COVID, because the PCR testing is really not adequate as a clinical test. So there's a lot of problems in trying to think about the epidemiology of this disease.
So the data which we've got and the information which has been shared in the mainstream news seems awfully at odds with data we're getting at other sources. Yeah, can we put it like that?
Yes, it's really, yes. And some of that you might expect during a pandemic. Nothing is certain. You know, they start in one direction, then they back off, say masks, then no masks, and now this, and then that, because we're dealing with something brand new, and we really don't know much about it. So that makes it difficult, I think. But I do know that the clinical test of the PCR, the polymerase chain reaction, was never meant to be a clinical test, and that when they do iterations beyond 25 or 30, then they're seeing debris. You might have had a cold 2 weeks ago and some coronavirus type proteins that cross-react with the COVID ones, maybe confounding it. And I understand there's a lot of false positives as a result of things like that. There's no standardization of that PCR test. And there are other tests. There's antibody tests, which simply say you were exposed to it, you made an antibody. It doesn't say that it's active in you now. So there's a lot of issues trying to detect and classify cases. And often they're not just going by symptoms. For a long time, they said, there's all these people who are asymptomatic but have it based on this test. And I'm not sure I agree with that. I certainly don't think they were active carriers building contagion without symptoms, as it was told to us for some time, that we should be careful with everyone because they may be silent carriers.
Yes. So what you're saying, reading between the lines, is that the media appear to be exaggerating this. Our governments even seem to be exaggerating this.
Yes, certainly. There was, I would say, a lot of exaggeration, a lot of misinformation or uncertainty, and then switching from one story to another that's ongoing. And it's all very confusing to the average person in terms of knowing what's really happening and what to do. And even physicians, I think. And then, of course, some of the things that were very active against COVID-19, such as hydroxychloroquine, in some places have been banned or poo-pooed because it seems to me that they wanted to sell their latest drugs and strategies to combat it rather than a cheap, no longer patented, generic 60-year-old drug.
Yes.
So.
Yeah, which nobody could make any money from, unfortunately.
Yes.
So it kind of comes back to the money, unfortunately, and that's the world we live in. But we, you know, we can't be put off track by the money now. You know, this is people's lives and people do need to know the truth. So I just want to back up to something you said and underline it, which is really important for people that are listening. So we're not saying here today, you're not saying here today, and I'm not either, by the way, is that 5G is causing this coronavirus. And because there had been people making those kind of noises, saying those kind of things at one point last year. And that is not really serving our cause here, you know, serving the truth in any way. That is misleading, and that is and that actually serves those that are playing down this whole 5G thing, because it makes what we're doing look, you know, less scientific, reliable, and, you know, they can sort of put that to one side and say, well, no, there's no truth to that. So we're not saying it causes it.
That's correct. I'm saying that it's a contributing environmental factor. And besides changes in the blood leading to disseminated clotting, which is a distinct part of COVID, with a lot of organ damage if you get the full-blown version of it, and oxidative stress and hyperinflammation and disruptions in the immune system, there's also another intersection from radiofrequency radiation effects and COVID, and that is increased intracellular calcium. And Dr. Martin Paul has pioneered this with saying that radio frequencies, microwaves, and millimeter waves would change the porosity of voltage-gated calcium channels on our cells, and which exclude calcium and maintain very tight levels in our cells. So those things get opened by virtue of microwaves, and calcium rushes in at much higher levels. Now, that was very important for COVID-19 because, as it turns out, high intracellular levels of calcium are absolutely required for this virus and probably other viruses in general to get into the cell, to replicate, and to exit the cell. So in that sense, it makes all of your cells more infectious to the agent, and it would exacerbate the spreading of COVID as well. So it was one of those, a further intersection of how radio frequency, biological effects of exposure to it, and how COVID manifests in us. And where we saw those intersections of in the biology, I said, well, then it makes sense that radio frequency radiation exposure is exacerbating this, because those are the things that happen under COVID. And over here, some of the same things, the same mechanisms are going on with radio frequency radiation exposure. And so, therefore, we have to say there's an intersection here. We can't ignore that this environmental toxin of radio frequency radiation would be exacerbating COVID-19 and making the pandemic a bigger problem.
Yes.
Where there's wireless radiation in the world. And that's, of course, we're at a very pivotal time, 2020, 2021, where this infrastructure is still being widely deployed worldwide. And so we're at a place where I thought, if I need to get this word out right away to try to stop the proliferation of this wireless infrastructure before it's too late. Because we have this pandemic and we have this infrastructure going in right now in many places, including 42,000 satellites, if not 100,000. I've read some different reports on that, surrounding the Earth up in the lower Earth orbit, that would be blasting the Earth with 5G frequencies, which range from microwaves all the way to millimeter waves, in addition to all of the so-called small cell antennas and base stations on Earth, that would totally change the electromagnetic environment of our planet and exacerbate probably not just this virus, but potentially other viral infections too.
Yes. So quite simply, the concern is that the rollout of 5G is going to make everything that's going on now with relation to COVID-19 possibly worse, probably worse. And that's what your research paper is suggesting. So let's talk about, and there's, and you've laid out ways, there's a lot of intersections here between the COVID-19 and the wireless effects. And I want to talk about that in a sec. But firstly, if we can just people can understand how you explored this link, you know, how did you go about doing your research?
Well, I originally started with four of us were working on this, and two dropped out, I think maybe because they were scared, two scientists working with us, because we were delving in a topic that was considered unconventional. And if you were to search on Google, for example, for the words 5G and COVID-19, all you get is conspiracy theory. It seems to me with a worldwide pandemic, we should be having an intelligent conversation about all of the factors, including environmental, that might be involved. So why are we being prohibited having this intelligent conversation that is brushed aside by our search engines as nothing more than conspiracy theory? That to me is unbelievable in the age of this pandemic, which is caused such a devastation, not so much in terms of deaths, but in terms of, I would say, the sociological and economic effects. The reaction to it has been really much worse than the disease itself. But we should be asking the question, what is that environmental link? Because even the CDC and epidemiology teaches that that's the third pillar of what causes disease. So two of my co-authors actually dropped out on this paper. And Dr. Robert Brown, who's a radiologist connected with University of Pittsburgh in Pennsylvania, and I continued, and we searched the literature. He took the COVID because he's a physician, and I took the radio frequency radiation issue because I'm a biophysicist. And we searched the literature broadly. We looked for intersections in terms of the mechanisms of action and effects at the biological level of these. And we used Medline, which is the entry gateway to the U.S. National Library of Medicine, which is where all of the peer-reviewed medical literature would be found, at least that's recognized by the United States. And also there was a military database that I found where many of the older Russian papers from going back to even 1969 had been translated by the military and by intelligence agencies. And once they were declassified, then they were put up on this database. So I was intrigued because there were really a lot of papers from, especially back in the 1970s, the Russians were doing a lot of research on this, and their studies were more long-term than most of the studies done today in the laboratory. So they would take animals and expose them for months, for hours a day, and to very low levels of radiation. Because the Russian guideline, by the way, is for exposure is about 100 times less than that in the United States, precisely because they did find these so-called non-thermal effects, effects on the biology that go beyond just tissue heating. And so I was reading all of these papers, and especially these old Russian papers, which really pointed to some very dire effects when you have long-term exposure of very low levels of microwaves and millimeter waves. And so Rob and I then put all of this together in the paper, and we found five ways in which the effects of microwaves and millimeter waves, the biological effects, intersect with what's going on with COVID-19. And just to summarize the five ways, we've already discussed the unhealthy effects on the blood. Mm-hmm. That I discovered back in 2014, that Magda Havas also pioneered, showing sticky blood, the first stage of clotting. The Russians even said longer-term exposure would lead to early blood clotting. And of course, we have a lot of disseminated intravascular coagulation going on in COVID. So that leads to organ damage and even hypoxia. If the blood doesn't flow, you're not getting oxygen to the brain and other parts of the body. So it wasn't so much that you needed air pumped into your lungs. And they found that out early on, that people, the ventilators weren't working. It wasn't a conventional pneumonia, but there was still this lack of oxygen in the body. But if your blood's not flowing, that oxygen's not getting delivered. And it's not flowing because of the disseminated clots in part, and then later a pneumonia that would set in as well. But it wasn't a classic viral pneumonia. It was more from, I would say, increased oxidative stress as well as these blood changes. And then there was immune system disruption. That was long known in the literature of radiofrequency radiation. And COVID also leads to changes like hyperinflammation and something called a cytokine storm, which means that these pro-inflammatory biochemicals in the body are released at higher levels, which really causes a shock to the system. And a lot of changes, including tissue damage from oxidative stress, occur so that you can even have organ failure, whether that's of the heart or of the kidneys or of the lungs. And in fact, COVID has numerous manifestations. It's not a simple disease that you can say, well, it's three symptoms. No, it's dozens of symptoms, and depending upon which organs are affected, because that virus can bind to a receptor that has that is found on many, many organs and tissues. So even though it might come in through the respiratory, nose and mouth, etc., it can spread throughout the body and attack any number of organs.
With EMFs, there are dozens of symptoms. So
exactly. So there we have another commonality. I already mentioned the increased calcium levels, which Martin Paul has pioneered with radiofrequency radiation effects, disrupting the voltage-gated calcium channels. So you have too much calcium inside cells. And all of that calcium, of course, is required for viruses to enter the cell, to replicate, and then also to exit the cell so they can infect yet other cells and spread out there into the population as well. So this attack on voltage-gated calcium channels that radiofrequency radiation does, again, would naturally help the virus do its thing and make this pandemic worse and even the disease within individuals more severe.
Yes.
And then one other effect that we didn't mention was effects on the heart. Cardiac arrhythmias, palpitations, irregular heartbeats, and other changes in the heart, because the heart has the special receptor that COVID binds to. But there's a large literature showing arrhythmias and cardiac effects from microwave exposure and millimeter wave exposure. And also Magda Havas has published on this as well in Modern Times. But it goes back to the 1970s. We knew most of these things since then. And they were done by the Russians and translated by the United States military and intelligence agencies. And many of those papers that I found on this military website were only recently released. And they were translated in the 70s and released in over beyond year 2000. So there's some 30 years we didn't know about these things in the open literature.
Right. Is that the Zuri Glaser archive you're referring to?
That's one of them, but there are definitely more papers. And I mentioned the database in my paper, the military database in my medical research paper on this. And
can everybody
I don't know
that?
It offhand. Yes, okay. It's freely accessible. It's on online, and you can show the website if you wish.
Okay.
Both Medline and the military database were very useful, because the very old papers from the 1970s generally aren't accessible on the National Library of Medicine. And they're often too old to have been archived and to be online. But the military databases, where they translated those papers and they made them classified for years, then had released them. And so there they were. And I was delighted, because there are the long-term studies that we've been missing. That are not done these days. Often we do short-term studies with animals or cells, but the Russians really did very thorough work 50 years ago.
Yes, and this kind of makes me think of what Dr. Martin Paul did, you know, because it was like with his paper, which came out in 2013, where he was talking about these voltage-gated calcium channels for the first time, and the data was already there, the science was already there, and he joined the dots. And it seems to me as though this is what you're doing. It's the same, because this science has been there decades, as you say, and yet for some reason somebody's not looking at it. And you know, when I'm listening to you speaking, and I've read this through a few times, this paper you sent me and everything, and it all just seems so obvious, you know, and with the way you lay it out. So we've got these five effects: these blood changes, oxidative stress, immune system disruption, this increased intracellular calcium, this Martin Paul work, and these cardiac effects. And those are the five ways that this RF radiation, which is, you know, cell phones and cell towers and Wi-Fi and all that, that's these five kind of effects which these exposures can cause. And then on the same page, we're lining up these manifestations, what we're seeing with the COVID patients. And it's just like it all slots in, doesn't it? It all fits together.
Yes, it really does.
So give me the but.
Well, I mean, I don't think it's all the same. And some people will say, but does your paper show that it's all about wireless? Not really. I mean, I don't see people dropping like flies from wireless. Not yet. Maybe from 5G.
But it's long term. They're not dropping like flies. But then we have this upsurge in chronic disease, you know, which practically ties in from when cell towers were first introduced, you know, in the mid-90s, we have this massive uptick in chronic disease. And, you know, okay, it's a medium to long-term effect. And yes, that is a difficulty, is tying this. So there does appear to be a correlation, but obviously that's not proof.
Remember, wireless is one of the onslaughts against life in our times, but there are other things. There's chemical toxicity. We have pesticides, herbicides like glyphosate that have been widely abused and used. And of course, I consider this like a 1-2 punch. On the one hand, you've got wireless, which in part opens the blood-brain barrier. And then you have things like glyphosate getting in to the brain. And people have written about this. It isn't just about one toxin in the environment anymore. Although environmentalists tend to take one at a time and talk about it. And, you know, my paper is quite lengthy, just talking about one thing. But I did leave open the question of one of the last references, pointing out that it's not just about single toxins. There are multiple toxins in the environment.
Yes.
I know in China, because they do a lot of manufacturing, there's a lot of air pollution.
Yes.
And people have pointed out that may be also a factor in, let's say, the exacerbation of this disease in Wuhan and other regions of China, although they seem to have combated it much better than the West. It seems to me
if we can rely on what we're being told. And
well, that's right.
By the way, on that point with the air pollution, we've got a Harvard study which is saying the same thing, which is finding that, you know, breathing this polluted air raises the risk of COVID-19. It's not just EMFs, but it's this. So it's not even just RFs, in my opinion. So your study is on the wireless, but it's on the lower frequencies as well, almost certainly. And I'm speculating, obviously, but there's an impact here, because we've got research on that also. We've got similar effects, oxidative stress, the immune system is suppressed, and there's less research on it. But it's very probable that these lower frequencies are playing into it, that, as you say, the air pollution is playing into it, that other environmental stresses are playing into it. But then also, then it's just this thing about EMFs, how they're ubiquitous, how they're everywhere, and we don't give them a second thought, and they're interacting with all of that. It's their ability to interact with all of the above.
Exactly. Because you can't smell them, taste them, or feel them in most cases, you forget about them. And, you know, you think about your cell phone like it's an AM or FM radio, but it's not. It's an active emitter. And we have a lot of active emitters right around us, besides the new infrastructure getting built. And that concerns me a lot, because people are very unconscious about these things. And I have a certain number of health clients that I advise. And I have a lot of elderly people who get all the latest wireless stuff, including Bluetooth hearing aids, electric cars that have wireless in them as well. And they have the latest cell phones and sitting in their pocket. And they wonder why they have heart palpitations. They're wearing it right over their heart.
Yes.
And they wonder why they've had a recent stroke. When I pointed out, I say, you have to read my study on the blood, because you're totally at risk, and you're not aware of these risks, because tell me, what physician is telling you this? None of them are. The cardiologists don't know about it. It's not being taught in most cases and as a, let's say, continuing medical education course for physicians. It just hasn't permeated those circles yet, although it should. So it's just relatively unknown, and they're always in, like, really, they're often surprised to hear that maybe this is a cofactor in their malady of stroke and heart disease. And it certainly is.
Yes. So the question begs, what can we do? What are the solutions, in terms of 5G?
Well, first of all, I wrote also a policy briefing that went out to Washington. It wasn't the best time, I think, because so much turmoil going on in Washington. But I still have hopes that the president might make an executive order to stop the infrastructure, the wireless infrastructure of 5G, before it's too late, so that we can review the evidence, so that we can really... I mean, one of the things we don't understand is, how do these digital signals, which are really the pulsations, you know, the ones and zeros of computers that make the signal go up and then off and on and off and on and off. That's really what 5G, 4G, 3G, I mean, that's one of the real culprits. It isn't just the carrier wave of microwaves and millimeter waves. It's this unbelievably rapid pulsation that's driving us crazy. It's like, by contrast, I can stand at a light switch and I'll turn it on and off in a random way. And you're going to say, stop, I can't stand it. It's driving my vision crazy. That's what we're giving ourselves with these pulsing, digitally pulsing signals, which are now all around us, on and off, because that's how they communicate with the towers and little blips. And that has never been studied, because even back in the 70s, they looked at analog. They didn't have digital yet. And we have never studied real world, let's say digital devices, in the way that they're configured and the signaling that they make on humans and on animals and on cell cultures. We've always made some fake signal in the laboratory that's well characterized, that that is too simple really and doesn't represent the real world. We need to do these real world studies.
We do.
So that we know. Ooh. We don't know the real effects.
No. Because even when you look at the really big studies like the NTP study, you know, the Interphone study, they're always just like looking at one thing, like they're exposing the rats to the cell phone type radiation, and that's it. Nothing else. But what about, yes, you know, what about the dirty electricity kind of exposures? What about the electric field, magnetic field kind of exposures? What about all these different frequencies just on the wireless scale? And what about introducing the other environmental toxins as well? If we could do that, obviously that's a complicated study, but that's real life, isn't it?
Yes, even at least if we could do the electromagnetic and understand it once and for all. And if we did that, we could really set safety standards. We don't have safety standards anywhere. They're all guidelines. And they're guidelines largely set by the industry based on, in the United States, based on no tissue heating. In other words, it's really very old-fashioned ideas that if you have enough radio waves or microwaves, yes, the tissue will heat up because the water absorbs it and heats. But those aren't the real biological effects. There's many more effects at lower levels that they've totally ignored based on this pulsation, based on the real world signals. And those have not been studied. So we need to study that. And I would say then get safety standards finally accomplished and agreed upon worldwide. Because right now, the United States has some of the highest exposure limits, whereas Eastern Europe, Russia, even China has much lower standards. I think in Austria, it's 1,000 times less than the United States.
Yes.
And China, about 10 times less, Russia, 100 times less. So we're suffering.
We are. And in a perfect world, the research which you have done should be like the light bulb moment when we go, so what's happening now is kind of a consequence of, you know, all these exposures, RF and all the rest of it. Therefore now's the time to do something. That's what should be happening in a perfect world. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Right now, right before this worldwide massive deployment of the infrastructure is upon us. And I mean, it's been going on even during these lockdowns, I know in the United States at least, because schools are getting the Wi-Fi routers and antennas and are going up. And it's hard to tell from just the configuration alone whether it's 4G or 5G. But by the way, 4G is also essential for 5G, and they will be also densifying it. That's the word of the industry. They're going to be building more antennas for 4G too, because the two of them work together.
Exactly. And what's often happening, as I understand it, is the 5G antennas, they call them these small cell antennas, and they're like these refrigerator size boxes that they're going to be putting around in urban areas, every third to fourth house, something like that. But within this small cell, they're slipping in a 4G antenna.
Yeah.
And that's,
they need
that's,
both.
And you know, it's really, it's, which is the worst kind of thing, because the 4G is 24/7, whereas the 5G is on demand and it's more directional. But the 5G will probably have higher output. And as you say, it's got this pulsing, which appears to be worse. But again, we're kind of in the dark. Because we don't have the science, unfortunately, to clarify that question. But let me ask you, we'd love to have President Joe Biden and all the leaders of the world pass executive orders to just stop this tomorrow morning. but maybe that's not going to happen straight away. So how can this 5G be implemented safely?
Well, fiber optics are part of it. And that is a wired system whereby visible light is traveling in fibers. There's no hazard biologically to having any of this wired infrastructure done. So wherever we can, we should be using wires. In other words, the fiber optics. And we should ask for fiber optics all the way into our homes instead of having the last part be wireless. And I've seen the fiber optics already strung where I live for years, a couple years ago. These fat cables on the telephone poles, which we have in America. We don't have underground. So there they are. And of course, there's nothing coming to the home. They're intending to blast us with wireless. That's the last stage. And to build many more antennas in our very neighborhoods, near our schools, etc. That's the problem. And I also see another problem is if you do move up to the 5G devices, then you're exacerbating your own health problems. So we can say no to 5G in terms of not caving in to buy these devices.
Yeah. So it's not a question of implementing 5G safely, because there is no safe, is there? It's more a question of understanding that 5G is bad news for our health and implementing these other technologies, which are safer, faster, just better in every imaginable way. Might be a little bit more expensive. I'm not even sure on that. But takes longer to implement, that's for sure.
But I think there's something that we need to research. I did some studies on an app for a cell phone some years ago that showed some protective effect in heart rate variability changes. In other words, when people are exposed to wireless, they generally show more sympathetic tone, which means the stress response is activated in most people, whether they feel it or not. And yet, certain frequencies, which were now part of this app, given over the internet or on a cell phone, could ameliorate the stress response to some extent. In other words, there may be positive, life-positive or life-enhancing frequencies even that could modulate some of these 4G, 5G, 3G wireless radiation that could be beneficial to our health, that might even mitigate some of the harsh effects. But we need more research on this. That particular company fell apart. There were a lot of issues, and unfortunately that app is no longer. But it gave me great hope that, you know, on the one hand, where there are deleterious life-thwarting frequencies, there are, on the other hand, healthy frequencies. And there are certain medical applications in the millimeter wave region. There are devices with very specific frequencies that might, for example, normalize blood sugar in diabetics. I've read this literature, and most of it is, again, from Eastern Europe. And one of the therapies is called microwave resonance therapy. But it's not just general microwaves. And by the way, the microwaves that we use for our routers, at least here in the US, 2.45 gigahertz, is the same frequency used in microwave ovens. Now, how healthy is that?
Exactly.
Obviously, it's the frequency at which water absorbs. That's how the food gets heated. But we're mostly water, too. So we didn't choose a very sensible frequency for our router. Why did this happen? In the United States, because that's a free band. The industry doesn't have to pay for it. And so, therefore, they want to use that preferentially for devices so they don't have to pay money to the federal government for using this band. Because all the other bands are, the industry has to pay billions of dollars for this piece of band and that piece of band. It's allocated, it's sold, literally. It's like natural frequency bands, bandwidths that get sold, literally, to industry. That's how it's done here in the US. Yeah. Now, another bad frequency that 5G is taking on is 60 gigahertz. 60 gigahertz is absorbed by oxygen. We breathe oxygen. And some people have thought, well, this may be out already, and maybe it's involved in the hypoxia that people are experiencing. I combed the literature up and down, and I could not find any evidence that even though oxygen absorbs 60 gigahertz, And thereby it stops 5G over short distances so that it would be useful for short distance applications. I couldn't find any evidence that that would change the oxygen molecule in a way that would make it not useful to our bodies. But I looked high and low and I couldn't find anything. That doesn't mean that it doesn't have this effect, but that needs to be researched. That is not a good choice of a frequency to be used in 5G because, again, living things need oxygen. And why are we taking a life-giving molecule like oxygen, zapping it with a frequency that may change it? That doesn't sound sensible to me. Yeah. So instead of the choice of the frequencies that we've already made for 5G, we might be adding to it life-positive frequencies that would undo some of the damage. But a lot more research needs to be done before we can say what those frequencies are at this time.
If we could just spend a fraction of the money, which is going on the 5G rollout on that, wouldn't that be fantastic? But maybe that's not going to happen. So we need to, people need to know how to protect themselves, what they can do to reduce their exposure. So can you share some tips on that?
Yes. I mean, right now it would be useful if you knew what levels you're exposed to of 4G, and there are inexpensive 4G meters. I like the Cornet meter, but there are plenty of meters. And with the Cornet meter, you can measure everything from extremely low frequency all the way up, including 60 hertz or 50 hertz for power line frequencies, all the way up to about 6 gigahertz. That only takes you into the low region of 5G. As it turns out, there's really no meter for the people that will measure 5G over about 6 gigahertz. But my laboratory is working on one. So we're developing a 5G meter for the people because the meters that exist are not handheld, and they cost about $100,000, and they're military grade because these frequencies were used for military radar. That's what we're doing. We're taking things that were military domain radar and in some cases weapon systems like 95 gigahertz and bringing that down now for civilian use. Supposedly in 5G communication transmissions.
And your EMF meter will measure what frequencies?
Well, we want to take it up to at least 70, 80 gigahertz, but we're probably going to make it in stages because the first 5G rollouts will not go up as high as 90 gigahertz. They will maybe go up to about 26 gigahertz from what I've heard. So right now the chips for those higher frequencies are so very expensive that to make a meter would be so costly that the public couldn't afford it, and they don't need it yet. So we'll make a meter that will go up to about 26 gigahertz first round, and then subsequent meters as 5G morphs into its higher frequency realms.
So obviously, so that's great advice.
So that's one thing you need to do. Know your exposure, and then you can start moving things around the house. I see people who unbelievably have a router right near their main computer, right near their desktop computer, and it's just a meter or so from their head. This is so serious, really, to have that kind of
exposure.
And
then when we think about what you were saying right at the beginning of that, about just what it's doing to your blood, with, you know, forgetting everything else, then we can begin to understand how serious this is and, you know, how crazy it is to do that and how crazy it is even, you know, to hold a cell phone next to your brain.
We have to realize that the greatest control we have is over our immediate environment. And by the way, your immediate environment of home, school, business is your greatest exposure. It's not about the antennas out there. In most cases, they won't be right on top of you, right? You know, a few meters from your home. But the real problem is your use of wireless devices in your immediate environment. And you have control over these. You can choose to use them less. You can turn them off when not in use. Reduce your exposure. I'm not saying don't have a cell phone. I have one, but I've got the old Ethernet DSL whenever I can. I'm wired. I don't want wireless. It's hackable. The wired is infinitely safer, less hackable, as well as better for my health. There's no problem with having DSL Ethernet. on your computers. And I don't know what the big fascination is with wireless. Who's running around the house with a computer anyway? Most people sit down at a workstation, even if it's a notebook computer, and they're working away, and they're not running around the house with their devices. There's really no need for wireless at home.
I agree, but I think it's a generational thing, you know? Because when I see, you know, my kids and things and how they are, they prefer wireless. Wireless is easier, and wires are, you know, wires are a bit ugly, you know, but they're safer. And when you begin to understand just how dangerous wireless is, then frankly, it's a no-brainer. So yeah, so reducing your measuring your exposures, and then reducing your exposures in your immediate environment, in your home and in your office if you can. And then beyond that, so where are you on earthing, for instance? Because that's a really controversial topic, and there's those that are for it, like, you know, the
yes.
people in the Earthing Institute, and those that are against it. For instance, Dr. Sam Milham, he's been quite outspoken against it. Power expert Dave Stetzer is also against this practice, and a number of other building biologists are also against it, and EMF consultants. What's your take on this?
Well, I like earthing. I like the real natural earthing. I like getting outside every day. I'm a gardener and an urban farmer, and taking my shoes off when it's not too cold and putting my feet on the good earth, or taking a walk on a beach barefoot. And I can do that in California. I know many places you can't, but natural earthing, if possible, where you are, is to me the best thing. And I feel so much better getting away from technology in general. And I'm not really exposed to that much wireless in my immediate environment. But getting out in nature is really healthy for you. And getting reconnected with the good earth, which supports life in so many ways, not just food and water, but the electron-rich earth. I mean, this is the point of earthing. You're getting this, you're electron deficient. And the kind of blood that I see, this sticky blood, means that your cells are deficient in electrons. Because if they had the proper electron environment, they would repel one another, because like charges repel. And all of your cells should have this net negative charge due to electrons on the outside. But the problem is most of them aren't, because we live in such synthetic environments with, you know, synthetic carpeting that builds static charges, and we wear synthetic clothes. All of them are electromagnetically inferior, really, and they don't support us. And therefore, getting in a natural place where we get that dose of electrons on our hands and feet as gardeners, I think is very healthy. There are a lot of earthing products. I must confess, I haven't studied them, but I think that they would be useful, but not as good as going out to Mother Earth.
Yes. Okay. And then beyond that, what else can we do? So we know, because we got this, you know, you've given us this little summary in your paper. You've got this summary of all the ways that this wireless is impacting us, you know, the blood and the oxidative stress and the immune system and all of that. So what else can we do to mitigate these effects?
Well, there are protective measures like shielding. If you really have problems, then you may want to consider shielding paint or wearing shielding clothing around the head or the body. I myself bought a t-shirt, and it seems to be a nice soft fabric, but it has silver impregnated threads that would help block some of the radiation. These things are not 100%. They only block some of the radiation. Again, if you had a meter, you could see the degree. You could put the meter under the clothing and see how much is being blocked. It's not 100%, but it helps. It shields some of it. There are other protective devices. I've been involved in helping develop things like certain pendants that worn at the heart level may, they're passive. They're not actively powered or anything, but they may provide key frequencies that boost the biofield, the energy field of the body. If we can strengthen the biofield, which is our part of our energy field, then yeah, maybe we can ward off some of these artificial fields more readily. We can be more resilient.
Can you share a product recommendation on that, one that you know that works?
Well, one of the products I've worked on is a Mezcua pendant, Qi pendant number 3. And that's out of a company called QNET, which is, I believe, out of Hong Kong and Malaysia.
Okay.
So that is something I'd recommend. There are others, and I have to say, we need multiple help here because I have not found any singular product that is going to do it all. So if you say, oh, I've got this sticker on the backside of my phone and therefore I can put my phone in my shirt pocket, I'm sorry, I don't agree with that. I have not found any product out there that does 100% protection. And we need to use multiple products.
Yes.
Until there's a breakthrough, and there hasn't been a breakthrough yet, as far as I can tell, that will do total protection. So it's wise to have multiple products. But if there are other products that you use, look for independent research that was done on them, and if possible, publication in a peer-reviewed journal.
Yes.
Then I know that it's not just hearsay from the inventor or the close associates of the inventor that put out the research.
Yes.
I like to see independent research, and I'm a scientist who does research like that independently on products, and other people invent them largely. So that's what you want to see. And if there's no research and they say there's research, well, demand that research. Ask for the report. If it's not on the website or handed to you, look for it, because I think there are people who think they've got something, but they haven't proven it adequately.
Yes.
And I think there's a lot of those. And we have to be we have to pick and choose carefully, because I see a plethora of these products coming out. And then people say, what about this? What about this? They're always asking me. And I say, show me the research study. I want to read it. And they can't find it. Or, oh, it's just two people. Oh, that's not enough. Two people. You need a study with at least 10 to 12 to really start making statistical sense.
Yes.
And controlled study where there's a fake device compared with the real thing. Because the minute you put a pendant around somebody's neck or a sticker somewhere, there's a tremendous placebo response. And it will stay for a while, maybe, but then that goes too. You want something that's a real effect that goes above and beyond a simply biology of belief, a placebo effect.
Yes, in the words of Bruce Lipton. So we're pretty much out of time. Just to reiterate, measurable mitigation first, that should always be your first line of defense. And then you add all this other stuff in, afterwards, like the earthing and what you were talking about just here with the various devices. Any very, very quickly, is there anything you just want to share here? And I know, by the way, just to say at this point, your research has not been published in a journal, and you're waiting for that we're hoping that that's going to be the case very soon.
Yes, it's in peer review now for one journal, and we're hopeful. It's on a preprint server, so it can be accessed and downloaded for anyone to read. One more thing I'd like to add, another thing that I'd like to investigate that I think may be promising for effects of radio frequency radiation exposure would be glutathione. Now, you can't take this orally. It won't go in. It'll break down. But liposomally, it could be used. So that is protected by a little lipid around it. Mm-hmm. And I've seen more recently a type of glutathione that you spray on the skin and rub in. And there are some trials on that related to COVID that look very promising. But remember, we have the same kind of oxidative stress. What is glutathione? It's the master antioxidant in the body. And it's not something so much in the diet as made in the body. But most of us are depleted of glutathione because of all the stressors in our lives, including wireless. So if we can boost our glutathione levels, we can better fight the stress of wireless and also the disease of COVID, as shown in a few trials that I looked at. So, but you can't expect to take just a usual supplement. It would be liposomal or special products that you squirt on the skin, that you spray and rub in, that are made to transit through the skin into the bloodstream. And there's also intravenous glutathione that was used in trials with COVID and helping people, and they survived where others in control groups didn't make it. So this looks like a very promising method to boost our antioxidant level. And I would say probably a diet rich in antioxidants may be helpful, and more natural antioxidants than synthetic ones that are in pills. So again, your diet needs to be rich in fruits and vegetables, and think all the colors, the orange, the yellow, the green, the red, all of that is very healthy.
Wonderful. Listen, we're out of time. I just want to share your two websites so that people can learn more about what you're doing there. So brubik.com, that's spelt like your name, brubik.com. And the other website I mentioned at the beginning, the nonprofit lab, frontiersciences.org. And is it like somewhere where people can donate on that website, the frontiersciences.org?
Yes, we're a nonprofit lab, and we really need more funding, especially for the development of the 5G meter and also a 5G dosimeter. We want a dosimeter so that people can know all the frequencies they're exposed to. They can download it once a day and see what's going on in terms of their exposure, because exposure to these toxins, toxic rays, are cumulative. And, you know, just as you would wear a dosimeter if you're around X-rays or radioactivity, it would be useful to monitor yourself or your children with a dosimeter to understand what's going on in the school, what's going on in the workplace and at home, once and for all, so we don't just have guesswork.
Listen, I love the work you're doing, seriously. I love the work on the biofield. I love the work you're doing here. Hats off for doing this. It's very courageous, because I know, as you said, you know, people are frightened about talking about this, and we have to talk about this, and we need more people like you, and you know, who've got the courage to do it, and got the experience, because you're a very credentialed researcher. So yeah, wonderful. And you speak about this very eloquently, and in a way that people can understand. And I love your energy. You know, you've got a lot of grace about you, how you present this, and that's very nice. So yeah, thank you so much for doing this work and for sharing this here today.
Thank you, Lloyd. It was really a pleasure. Appreciate all your good work in getting the word out.
Thank you. And thank you, listener, for attending today. So if you're looking for solutions to deal with EMFs and their effect on your health, this interview and all my interviews are in the EMF Expert Solutions Lab with transcripts. Information is on my website. In the next episode, I'll be interviewing another expert. So watch your inbox for details. My name is Lloyd Borrell from electricsense.com. Thank you so much. Have a great day. Thank you. Bye-bye.